DW Spectrum with Connor Dillon.
Hello and welcome to Spectrum. My name is Connor Dillon. This episode is jam-packed, and if you listen to all of it, and I really hope you listen to all of it, you are going to walk away healthier. You really are. So to start things off in that direction, I am going to go ahead and pour some muesli into my cereal bowl here. And while I pour some milk in there and also add a little touch of fruit for good measure, sometimes you can also put yogurt in there as well, my colleague Neil King is going to tell you more on why eating muesli is a really good idea.
Muesli against aching joints. Our gut bacteria have been found to influence our health in many ways. Now, researchers from the German University of Erlangen have shown that the metabolic products produced by our gut bacteria can impact our immune system and autoimmune diseases, such as arthritis. The researchers found that a diet rich in fibers enables our gut bacteria to produce more short-chain fatty acids, which have been found to slow down the degeneration of our bones and have anti-inflammatory properties. A daily bowl of muesli and eating enough fruit and vegetables can keep our gut bacteria healthy and protect our joints, the researchers say.
Excuse me. Thank you for that, Neil. But all of that said, there's one fruit that you might want to reconsider putting in your muesli, and that is the banana. And it's not because they're unhealthy, they are healthy for you, but because of the way they're being produced in some countries. Lisa Josefsen Hermann has more from Ecuador, told here by Natalie Müller.
It's a regular week in Ecuador's banana-growing region near the Pacific coast. A fumigation plane flies low overhead, spraying pesticides across the banana plantations. That happens once a week, 45 weeks a year. Bananas are big business in Ecuador. It's the second most important sector in the national budget, after oil. Banana production directly employs about 200,000 people in the country. This is one of more than 5,000 plantations in Ecuador helping to meet the global demand for the sweet tropical fruit. But the pesticides used in banana production here are making the workers, their families, and even people just living in the banana area sick. Seriously sick. I'm visiting the village of San Pedro de Layi, some 250 kilometres west of the capital Quito, in the banana province of Los Ríos. It's lunchtime, and some villagers are resting in hammocks outside their houses, while children play in the dusty streets. Almost everyone around here works on the banana plantations, like 45-year-old Gregoria Ramirez. She's a patient woman with a calm attitude, always with an eye on her son Tyson. Gregoria worked on the banana plantation until she was pregnant with her son 6 years ago, but she was never able to go back to work because Tyson was born with several deformities.
I told the doctors that I worked on a farm where the plane was spraying fungicides. Then they said it was because of these chemicals that my son was born like that, with malformations.
Little Tyson has a big smile, but he's quite shy, hiding in his mother's arms. The six-year-old can't walk very well. One of his feet continues to cause him problems. He was born with a hole in his spine and liquid in the brain, a condition called hydrocephalus, and he will need diapers for the rest of his life because of his incontinence. Almost one-third of Ecuadorian bananas are exported to the European Union. At supermarkets in Germany, for example, consumers can buy a kilo of Ecuadorian bananas for about €1.50. But plantation workers in Ecuador are paying a high toll because of the toxic cocktail of pesticides they're exposed to. According to a new study published by the Ecuadorian environmental organisation Acción Ecológica, there are 26 pesticides commonly used on Ecuador's banana plantations. They also appear on the list of the most dangerous pesticides compiled by the Pesticides Action Network, or PAN. Of the 26, seven are prohibited in the EU. And it's not only exposure to these chemicals from working on the plantations, which is a problem for Gregoria and her neighbours in the village San Pedro de la Yi.
Everywhere around us are banana plantations. In this direction, there's a banana plantation, and on that side, another banana plantation. Everywhere, we are surrounded by plantations.
Gregoria's community is suffering because of the frequent fumigation flights, and many children here are born with malformations. But it's not just children who are suffering from health problems caused by the pesticides. According to the World Health Organization, several of the pesticides used on the plantations here are carcinogenic. In Ecuador's banana provinces, the risk of getting cancer is 5.5 times higher than the national rate, according to studies. Researchers also found that banana workers have a 25% higher mortality rate than the rest of the population. A short drive from San Pedro de la Yi, I visit a school for children born with disabilities. Beatriz Garcia has been the school's director for several decades.
Wherever there's a concentration of banana workers, the level of children born with disabilities increases.
Hay mayor incidencia de discapacidades.
Beatriz, like many of the locals we spoke to, believes there's a link between birth defects and the extended use of pesticides in the region. According to official data, almost twice as many children in the banana-producing southwestern province of El Oro are born with birth defects compared to the rest of the country. Adolfo Maldonado, a doctor who has worked on several investigations into the health impacts of the pesticides, says the figures speak for themselves.
The congenital malformations were markedly increased among the population in areas receiving the aerial fumigation. Apart from malformations, the prevalence of cancer, particularly leukemia, was also much higher.
Maldonado was also involved in an investigation carried out for the National Ombudsman's Office in 2007. That probe showed that the mortality of fumigation pilots is 40% higher than the rest of the population. We put these figures to Eduardo Ledesma, the president of the Ecuadorian Association of Banana Exporters. He firmly rejected the findings.
I do not recognize that kind of problem, because that could have been caused by other circumstances and not necessarily the banana plantations.
Ledesma claims there is no connection between pesticides and health problems in the area and says that no dangerous pesticides were used on plantations in Ecuador. In fact, he says he believes that all the studies by health experts and environmental groups are fabricated. Contrary to the claims of the banana industry, during our investigation with Dan Watch, we found used containers with the pesticide Gramoxone on several plantations. That's the commercial name for paraquat, which is banned in the EU. There's also an international campaign for a global ban of the substance. According to several experts we interviewed, this pesticide is one of the most commonly used chemicals in Ecuador's banana sector. It's cheap and effective against weeds, but it's also a particularly dangerous pesticide, one that's been linked to the development of Parkinson's disease and is also known for its high toxicity and for severely damaging vital organs like the lungs, liver, and kidneys. The use of potentially noxious chemicals in banana plantations isn't unique to Ecuador. The situation is similar in other banana-growing countries in the region, such as Colombia, Costa Rica, and Guatemala. Still, Ledesma of Ecuador's Banana Exporters Association denies there's a problem with the pesticides used on the plantations.
Le estoy contestando que es falso.
I'm answering you that it's false. I can assure you that if it's forbidden in the EU, then it's not used in Ecuadorian banana plantations.
Our findings and the testimonies of the banana workers tell a different story. But until the producers start to acknowledge and address the problem, things are unlikely to change.
And that was Natalie Müller with the report there by Lisa Josephson Hermann. Well, for the sake of those Ecuadorians, I'm going to lay off bananas for a bit. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to chow down on this ripe, red, juicy-looking tomato. Very tasty. And as my colleague Neil King will explain, eating these things is an especially good idea for anyone who used to smoke cigarettes.
Ex-smokers, repair your lungs. Eating at least 2 tomatoes or 3 portions of fresh fruit, especially apples, per day might slow down the natural decline in lung function and could repair damage done by smoking. This was discovered by researchers of Johns Hopkins University in the US, who studied the eating habits of former smokers for 10 years. This study shows that diet might help repair lung damage in people who have stopped smoking. It also suggests that a diet rich in fruits can slow down the lung's natural aging process, even if you have never smoked, says Vanessa Garcia-Larsen, lead author of the study. The researchers hope that diet regulation can one day become a way of combating the rise of chronic diseases such as bronchitis.
So tomatoes for your lungs. You know, it would be even better if I grew those tomatoes myself. No pesticides, no fertilizers, just totally organic. The thing is, a lot of people really do try to grow their own vegetables, myself included, and you know what? I'm just not very good at it. I've tried. I put them out there and then I have a busy week and suddenly my promising cherry tomatoes have become withered and they're just generally sad looking. It makes me sad just looking at them. But what if we could grow our own vegetables, but they wouldn't be at our homes or in our apartments or on the balconies? They'd be somewhere else getting a constant supply of water and light. And what if I could get updates on my veggies through an app on my phone? Danny Mitzman has more on a radical new hydroponics concept on display in Bologna, Italy.
To start this, you can pick one of those rock wool cubes. That is like a basic module that you can use in hydroponic cultivation.
It feels like sponge.
Exactly. This is used in construction, but it can also be used in hydroponic cultivation. It's very safe.
Daniele Belleri works for the design office behind Man and the Future, Hortus, the installation here at Bologna's new agri-food park. He's showing me how urbanites might grow their own food in the future.
If we imagine that right now many people are already very interested in the origin of their own food from farm to fork, right? So if you push the boundary of the principles, maybe in 10, 20 years, there will be some supermarkets in which some areas will be dedicated to growing food. So I will take care of my plant, I will plant a seed, and through a web app, you can follow the growth of your own plant. And you can match your own profile, your own email address with the code of the plant that you just saw. And in that meantime, I will receive some notifications on my mobile phone so I can get updates on the status of the plant. So I can become a food producer, I can sow the seed, and then through time, I can get notification when there are the next steps of the growth of the plant.
And do I get photos as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. There's like a camera that is moving on the top of the hydroponic vegetable garden above it, and it's taking pictures of all the plants. And then you get those pictures of your plant on a mobile phone.
For many years, hydroponics or soil-free cultivation has been popular in greenhouses in Holland, the US and Russia, as well as in countries like Morocco where water supplies are scarce. But could it be a solution in tomorrow's concrete jungles? And could a simple mobile phone app turn inner-city dwellers into active farmers? Daniele and his colleagues show me how it works at their pavilion.
So each person can take this piece of sponge rock and then can move across the pavilion where we have selected 4 kind of seeds. So we have, for example, 2 kind of lettuce, rocket, and we have basil. You take one single seed and like put into the rock wool unit.
We've chosen a curly lettuce seed. Is that what a curly lettuce seed looks like? Because it looks like it's sugar-coated almost.
Yeah, it's a particular kind of seed because that can allow the seed to have a higher possibility of like giving life to a plant, which is almost 100%. And we have to plant one of our model with the seed in one of the holes that there is on the ground so that the lower part of the model will be immersed into water. Well, actually, it's not exactly water. It's like water with some particular nutrients. That is one of the specifics of the hydroponic cultivation, once again.
Power water.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so it's in its magic rock wool, the magic coated seed in magical water. And we've put ours
with
in...
magical lights.
With magic... Ah, we have special lights as well. Okay, tell me about the lights.
Well, the lights are very interesting because they make the situation in the pavilion as if every day is the 21st of May. like a sunny day in spring in Italy. And so that's like the optimal condition for these plants to grow. And so our consultant, hydroponic consultants, has decided that this light has to be a particular tone. And so it's always spring in our pavilion.
The consultant in question is hydroponics expert Paolo Battistel, who spent the past 40 years perfecting his soilless cultivation techniques.
We have used the LED lights, LED lights. There is a mix of red and blue lamps because they are the colors absorbed by plants. But we have added also some white lamps to give the positive visitor to see the real color of the plants. Otherwise, you see everything purple. In normal installation, commercial installations, there is not the white color. The red is absorbed by plants to do the photosynthesis, and the blue is necessary for the so-called photomorphogenesis. It means the plant is able to produce the organs, leaves, flowers in the right way. Without the blue waves, the plant will become crazy.
Does the cycle that the plants go through reflect the natural cycle of a plant?
It is faster because we use an high intensity of light. And of course, we had to calculate also the installation for the fair.
The accelerated process would naturally take almost twice as long. In spite of this, Daniele believes it can make people feel closer to nature.
Even if you live in the city, thanks to this kind of system of cultivation, you can become more aware of the time of nature. So technology is allowing you to understand that nature has its own times, and you have to wait maybe for some weeks before your plant is ready. And you can also imagine that this can become like a future of retail somehow.
Well, maybe Daniele can, but I'm finding it pretty hard. Meanwhile, Paolo Battistel's keen to point out the eco-friendly aspect.
We can save water because here everything is recycled. In theory, we can use only 1 liter of water per 1 kilo of lettuce. In the open field, we use more than 100 liters per 1 kilo, so we save a lot of water. All the minerals are also recycled, so we don't have any pollution. The only bottleneck of this system is the high cost for electricity, so we have to work to solve this problem. But when we solve that problem, for sure it is the crop system of the future.
Paolo Battistel may be enthusiastic, but I can't help hoping we'll still be digging our potatoes up from the soil and picking our strawberries in fields. That said, if your children think salad comes from plastic bags, the Hortus Project may already be worth recommending to your local supermarket. Danny Mitzman, DW Radio, Bologna.
You know, with all this talk of fruits and vegetables, to be totally honest, I'm kind of in the mood for something a bit more satisfying. Well, lucky for me, I've brought a boiled egg with me. Let me just go ahead and crack it open here. While my colleague Neil King tells you about all the wonderful things that this boiled egg is about to do to my body.
Want to be as strong as Popeye? Eat whole eggs. Many people believe that eating egg whites after exercising helps to build muscles. They discard the egg yolk and only eat the whites. But a study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition suggests that the post-workout muscle-building effect is 40% higher in people who eat whole eggs rather than only the whites. The yolks contain protein and other key nutrients that are not contained in the egg white, the researchers suggest. So eating whole eggs after exercising is better for protein production in the muscles.
Well, maybe it's just the placebo effect, but I swear I'm already feeling stronger. Now, for our next segment, I would like to bring you some biology news that I know you haven't heard about, and that's because it didn't make the news at all. In studio with me now is my DW SciTech colleague. Her name is Brigitte Osterrath. Brigitte, this week you broke some news to our DW colleagues in our department, and it had all of us fearing for your husband's life. What was that news?
Well, that news was that my husband was bitten by a piranha.
By a piranha?
Yes.
Where did this happen?
At home, because we have a tank with 6 piranhas. They are our pets.
And how did you end up in possession of 6 piranhas?
Well, in the beginning there were 7. Just by the way. I wanted to buy an aquarium. I just wanted to have one for many years, and then I decided to buy one. So I, you know, went on the internet and was looking for secondhand aquariums, and there was a tank with 7 piranhas advertised on the internet.
So somebody here in Germany?
Yes, in Bonn.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. So right nearby here. And so you decided, I'm going to buy these piranhas.
Yes. Well, I went by there and had a look at them. And when I saw them, I was just like, yes, I have to have them. Because even when I was a small child, we went to the aquarium in Cologne. They have a really big tank with piranhas in it. And I've always loved these animals.
And I have to say, when I was a small child, I saw the 1980s horror film Piranhas. So I've had a very different conception of them, maybe a very fearful-based one. But let's go back to your husband. Was he on board with the idea of you putting piranhas in your home?
He wasn't so enthusiastic about it, but he said if I really wanted it, it was okay.
Okay, so you get these 7 piranhas. Today it's 6, but 7 piranhas into your home. And what's it like? What have you learned about piranhas now that since you've gotten them?
Well, they're completely different than what you think they are. Because they have the reputation of being a ferocious predator. You know, they rush by and just eat humans and cattle and everything just in seconds while they're still alive. but they are completely different because they're very timid, they're shy, they don't like new things at all. They really, if you change something in their tank, they don't like it. They want it to be as it has always been. And yeah, they are really afraid, scared of humans.
What do you feed them?
They get small fish. They're already dead. I buy them in a pet shop. They also eat shrimps and shellfish. And they're even interested in the fish food I have for my catfish, because there are also other fish in the tank. And they're still alive because the piranhas don't eat these still alive fish.
Why don't they? I would have expected them to devour any other living creature in there.
Yeah, but they are mainly scavengers. They really like, you know, dead animals, dead fish. And I don't know, sometimes they seem to be a bit interested in the fish still alive swimming around them. But then, yeah, they try to catch them, but then the other fish swim away, and then it's like, okay, they're still alive. Yeah, then, no, too much work.
Is it possible that you have a species of piranha that's more timid than other species, or are they all, as far as you know, are they all like this?
Oh, it's the red piranha, the red-bellied piranha, and they are, you know, they have the reputation of being the most ferocious of them all. So, no, it can't be the species. It's really like that the whole group of piranhas has a wrong reputation. They're not this ferocious, terrifying animals that eat everything alive.
And yet they are still capable of injuring us human beings, apparently. I'm looking down at the desk here, and you've brought something with you.
This is a tooth of one of my piranhas. I found it in the tank, and as you can see...
So they lose their teeth?
Yeah, obviously. I found one. I found two. Teeth,
okay.
But that's it. But
so this is smaller than any of our listeners have seen a European 1 cent coin. This is much smaller than that. Even it's a tiny, triangular, very sharp looking tooth. I mean, you can see the damage that it can do there. So let's go back to your husband. What did that bite? How did it happen?
It was my husband's fault, really, because one of the piranhas, his name is Bert. He's a bit sick and he needed a shot, antibiotics. So we tried to catch him out of the tank. And we normally, of course, you know, take a net and everything. But the piranha had hidden under a root in the aquarium. And then my husband, I don't know why he did it. He went in there with his hand trying to push the piranha out of his hiding place. And yeah, of course, that's something you shouldn't do. The piranha was really terrified because he knew what was waiting for him. And he don't want to be touched, nothing. And he just bit.
And where did he bite your husband? What did it look like?
Oh, it was in the pinky finger. And there was really a lot of blood. I think he bird has hit a blood vessel or so, and it was bleeding like hell. But my husband says it was not so painful. It was okay. It was just once around the pinky finger,
kind of in a circular shape, just like the mouth. Did your husband have to go to the doctor?
No, not at all. He just waited, and it looks fine. I mean, it's okay.
Okay, so piranhas are a bit more timid than we might popularly imagine.
A bit more timid, yes.
A bit more timid, but still a very ferocious bite when they're threatened.
Yeah, when they are really scared a lot of the times, and that's the only way they can defend themselves. Obviously, they don't have arms or feet or so. So yes, they can bite if they are scared and want to defend themselves. But it's just defense. It's not. They don't want to attack just for the lust of blood or something.
Brigitte Osterrath, thank you very much.
Somente na água doce se apanha, tá ouvindo piranha?
Piranha não dá no mar, piranha.
Okay, so we're going to move away from the meat-eating fish and go on to one last health tip for you here. And it actually doesn't involve eating anything or putting anything inside your body. It's about your face. And if you feel like your face is aging, if you look a bit older when you look in the mirror, well, there actually is something you can do about it that doesn't involve invasive surgery or taking any medicines. Here's Neil King again with some new research on how to make your face look better.
Drop the anti-aging cream. Use facial yoga. Found yet another line on your face? A 30-minute daily facial exercise program might help. Researchers at Northwestern University in the US found that different exercises performed for about 20 weeks strengthened facial muscles. This made the face firmer and younger looking. One exercise is called the cheek lifter. Form an O with your mouth. O. And pull your upper lip over your teeth. Then smile and place your fingers on the top part of your cheeks. Slowly release your cheek muscles. Then lift them back up. Well, that's the idea, anyhow. Best of luck to those of you participating in a daily facial exercise program.
Okay, now I have to try one too. This exercise is called the Happy Cheeks Sculpting. And first you smile like this, and then you purse your lips like this. Then with your fingers, you pull the corners of your mouth upwards, and you hold for 20 seconds, and then release. And I have to say, I did feel something there when I was doing that. And you know what it was? It was the cold, hard stare of my studio technician, Jürgen Kuhn, who's looking at me like I'm insane. Well, I would like to take a moment to thank Jürgen Kuhn for producing the show and for allowing me to fill his studio with the stench of boiled egg. I'd also like to thank all of you, our listeners out there, for listening to this show. I hope it has made you healthier in some way. And I hope it'll make your lives last just a little bit longer so we can keep, you know, interacting with each other. You can keep listening to the show, and I can keep getting feedback from you. We're at spectrum@dw.com. We're also online on Twitter. It's DW_SciTech. And you can also message us on Facebook. We are DW Science. That's it from me, Connor Dillon. Until next time, have a wonderful week ahead.